coming up on 12 noon. The show is now live and local. I'm Kevin Kelly, your host for the next hour. It's your connection to local music and more. And the first part of our show, we'll have both music and dance in the performance that we're going to be talking about, which is by Tango Buenos Aires from Argentina. They're going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock. And then they're going to be at the Krannert Center in Urbana later on this month. So a couple of opportunities to go see them once or twice in these next few weeks. Then in the later part of the show, a group that will be at the Krannert Center this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock is the Parker Quartet, string quartet that's going to be playing a nicely varied program. And I'll be talking with Karen Kim, one of their two violinists. It's live and local. Hope you'll stay with us.
Me acuerdo, fue en Valvanera, para Jacinto Chiclana.
My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Lucrecia Laurel, who is involved with art production and is coordinator for Tango Buenos Aires, who are actually going to be in our listening area twice in the coming weeks, including tonight at the Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Springfield for an 8 o'clock performance. And then they're going to come back to our area in February on the 10th to perform at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana for a 7:30 performance. And thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me.
You guys are in Missouri right now.
Yes.
In the midst of a how-long tour? When did you come to the States and how long are you sticking around?
We arrived on January the 4th and we are staying till April, the first days of April. We're leaving. It's a three-month tour.
That's a pretty nice tour. And then where to after that?
Well, after that, the group returns to Argentina and I keep traveling. I'm going to Europe and Asia to sell the show to those continents.
Ah, so you have a multi-layered job then.
I have a multi-layered, yeah. It's a family business.
Oh, really?
My mother is the general director, yes. So I'm pretty much taking care of the tango group. And, well, my idea is to keep touring next year.
Well, you certainly hope so. How long has the group been around?
Well, Tango Buenos Aires has been around for around 20 years, pretty much. The show renews every 3-4 years, we renew the show. And we renew it because we believe that there is always space to improvement, you know, and things have to be actualized and keep updated. And we are having in this new show composers, Argentinian composers, that are still alive and they're doing new tango. And it's really good because it keeps the audience also updated, you know, and fresh. It keeps the show very fresh.
Well, because presumably you'll be going back to some places you've been before.
Yes, exactly. And that's the great thing because if we had the same show, maybe you wouldn't be able to come back, you know.
Well, and if folks in Springfield and Urbana come out in droves and lots of people are there, then that'll certainly tell their producers that we ought to have Tango Buenos Aires back with us.
Yeah, and, exactly. We've been having a great response from the audience, standing ovation. We're really, really happy.
Have you found, as you've traveled around the world, that any particular countries are especially responsive to your performances?
Well, there are always like some countries that are really like tango. And it's really interesting because usually they are the countries which have like a more of a, how can I say, like a cold way of relating to each other. For example, in the north of Europe, in Finland, Sweden, all of those countries, they really love tango. also in Japan, they're really fanatics about tango. And you see culture-wise that this community, usually they're very cold in their relationships. And I think that tango appeals them because it's the opposite, you know? There is like, it's a dance that you embrace each other all the time, and that's something really soothing, I guess, for them to see that that is possible, actually, to embrace each other all the time.
have you... Yeah. I wonder, I had wondered when you said that, if it wasn't because people in cold countries need to embrace each other more so just to stay warm.
Yeah, exactly. It would be great if they could embrace more.
Do you know, I mean, do those same countries, do they do much tango themselves, or is it kind of exotic to them?
Well, tango has been very popular lately in these countries, and I know there is a Finnish tango version of it, which has it has some similarities, and they do dance together. In Japan, they have more of a theatrical kind of dancing, you know. But it has been one of the first countries that embraced tango so much that today you can see Japanese dancers and Japanese musicians doing tango.
And do they keep it, I mean, you said it's particularly dramatic. In what way?
Dramatic? Well, tango is about nostalgia, melancholy, you know, feelings, relationships. I think the drama comes there, you know.
Well, I meant you said Japanese tango is especially dramatic. I thought you said.
Oh, no, I said that they're kind of dances. They have like Japanese have more theatrical dances.
Theatrical, yes.
You know, like the no dance, and they're more like, they're older and they represent other things.
Yes, their own traditions. Okay, I understand what you meant. What do you think is, and then when you come to the United States, what kind of reception do you tend to get here?
People love tango. The American audience is really, really amazing.
Of course, a lot of people here do dance it.
There is more and more. It's growing and growing. The population that likes tango, that starts dancing it. It's amazing because you can go anywhere in the world and you will find a community there that loves tango. And you will find a place where to go and dance it and meet the people that love tango. So that's really interesting and really nice, you know. Like in the last 10 years, it has grown so much.
A famous tune called La Comparsita by Matos Rodriguez, and a performance here by accordionist William Schimmel with pianist Michael Saul and violinist Stan Curtis. That's the opening music that will be on the concert by Tango Buenos Aires at the Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock. This portion of Live and Local. My guest is Lucrecia Laurel from Tango Buenos Aires.
Every month, 170 million Americans use public media. That's like everyone who lives west of the Mississippi.
Plus everyone in New York and Florida. More than half the country uses public media to be informed, engaged, and inspired. Now, public media needs your support.
Learn more about federal funding for public media at 170millionamericans.org.
And support for our program today on FM 90.9 comes not only from many of those 170 million Americans, at least those who listen in our area, but also from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods in the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Tell me a little bit about the origins of tango. I was reading a little bit on your website about it, and there seemed to be a lot of questions, where it originated and how and so on. What can you tell me about that?
Well, the location of it, it's basically El Río de la Plata, which is the river that connects, the Atlantic, the sea, to Argentina and Uruguay. That was the river from where the Spanish people and the Europeans arrived to Argentina to conquer it. So that was the communication place, let's say, the meeting place of all of these different cultures that arrived to Buenos Aires and Uruguay. And so what happened? Immigrants arrived to Buenos Aires and Uruguay, and they made a new community of mixed people, you know, people from different countries, from different cultures. So they got together, and that way to communicate, you know, a very normal way, is through dance, through music, through art, through expression, through communication. So little by little, all of these communities started blending together, and they created tango.
Which countries in particular immigrants coming to Argentina?
Mostly Italian, Spanish. Then we have some French, and but mostly Spanish and Italian. Yeah, German, a little French.
Some African influence as well.
We do have African influences, and that dates back. They say that tango, maybe the name of tango came from tambor, which is a drum. Tambor in Spanish.
Yes. And I read here that originally, somewhere, or at least somewhere along the line, there were only male dancers doing the tango, and eventually females got added to it.
Well, the thing is that tango was first done in the lower classes that were all of these immigrants. What in reality, when they say that men danced with men, it is because men went to the brothels where there were prostitutes. And to practice this dance, they were engaging with the prostitutes. The men danced together just to practice it. So then go to a brothel and be able to dance with the girls.
Yeah, well, I guess you didn't want to advertise to the women that you were going to the brothels, is that it? At least not if
well,
you wanted
you know,
to get...
Well, you know, it was a big... The immigrants that arrived to Buenos Aires and Uruguay, there was a big majority of males because they were... They came over to Argentina to work. And males used to work a lot more than women back then. So since there was a big population of men, brothels were popular.
Sure, I can imagine why that might be. what about the music? How has that evolved? Because, for example, I noticed that on your program, you have a lot of pieces by Astor Piazzolla, who I remember said that his music wasn't really meant for dancing, and he sort of revolutionized the presentation of the musical side of the tango.
Totally,
so talk to me about the evolution.
He totally created a break in tango, and there is even lots of tango people that don't like Piazzolla. They say it's not tango. He was a genius. He was a gifted composer, and we love it. We love Piazzolla in Tango Buenos Aires. We embrace his music and his talent, and we owe him a lot because he has given tango a new step further.
What was happening musically before him, and then what did he do that has changed some of the presentation?
Well, before, you had, like, originally tango started with the guitars and flutes and some percussion, And slowly, little by little, you started having the bandoneon. And then with Piazzolla, you started having as well electronic music instruments like the drums or the electric guitar. So Piazzolla really brought new instruments as well to the tango.
And I noticed that the musicians that you have with you are essentially in the quintet form that Piazzolla mm-hmm. himself used most often.
In a quintet form, I'm sorry?
The orchestra you have is five players, right?
Yes, yes.
And you have, those are the same instruments that Piazzolla typically used.
Uh-huh.
Piano, guitar, yeah. violin, bass, and bandoneon, which is a sort of
exactly.
accordion.
Yeah, that's the, we can say it's a classical arrangement, musician for tango playing.
And did are the musicians on stage with the dancers?
Yes, they are.
And are they involved in the dancing at all, or they just, they don't get into that?
Well.
I mean themselves doing any dancing.
Some of them might dance socially tango. In the show, they're involved because musicians and dancers in the stage are a team together. So they have to be in communication, constant communication, you know.
And I imagine it's a very colorful spectacle.
It is. Some very shiny, beautiful costumes.
for both dancers and the musicians. Music by Astor Piazzolla called Los Sueños, Astor Piazzolla himself on the bandoneon, with Pablo Ziegler, piano, Fernando Suarez Paz, the violinist, Horacio Malvicino, electric guitar, and Hector Console on the double bass here on Live and Local. I'm talking with Lucrecia Laurel of Tango Buenos Aires, who are going to be at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock, and they'll be next month at Krannert Center in Urbana.
Yes.
I seem to remember, I mean, I've never studied the tango really, mm-hmm. but I seem to remember hearing, and then also from what I've seen tango dancing, typically the dancers, while they are very close to each other, often don't look at each other. Is that accurate? And if so, why is that?
Well, there are moments and moments of the dance. It also depends who is dancing with each other. If it's a couple that is in love, for sure in a moment they will look at each other's eyes. If they don't know each other, if you're in a social place and someone just asks you to dance, you might choose to... You have different kind of embraces. You have el abrazo cerrado, which is the closed embrace, and the girls is looking away. I mean, they are like cheek to cheek together, and their bodies are really close, so they're looking opposite. And then you have the open embrace, which there is more space between each other's bodies, but there is place to look at each other as well. Is that understandable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's
yeah,
very
okay.
interesting. Are there certain things that, let's say if somebody was judging a tango contest that they would look for, especially in tango dancers? I guess, in other words, what makes a really good tango dancer or a really good tango dancing couple?
I think the most important thing is that they have to feel it and they have to feel each other as well. So it is about giving yourself to the other person.
So there's obviously technique involved, but it's almost more an emotional expression?
It is an emotional expression. There is technique, but if you can sense others, but the other person's body, if you can sense that, you don't need much technique if you're able to walk with the other person listening to the music.
Mm. So it's really going to be, since I'm sure your dancers are extremely fine, should be quite
a
visceral
experience. Well, my dancers are dancers that work in stage, and they are social dancers as well, but they're professionals.
Yeah, so it's going to be if the emotion is a heavy quality of it, then it's going to be a very visceral experience for them and for the audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, what emotion brings is the fire and passion you see in the dance, you know? And because a couple embracing each other and they seem close to each other, what does that mean? It's fiery, it's passionate, it's like there is something going on there, you know?
And that's the name of your show, isn't it? The Fire and Passion of the Tango.
Uh-huh.
And it's Tango Buenos Aires, going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock, and then coming back to our area on Thursday, February 10th at the Krannert Center in Urbana for a 7:30 performance. My guest, Lucrecia Laurel, who is coordinator for the productions and also art production. And if you want tickets to the Sangamon performance, you want to go to their website for information. It's UIS for University of Illinois Springfield .edu/Sangamon Auditorium. And you can find all the information there. And for the Krannert Center performance, you can go to krannertcenter.com. And then they have various ways to find things on there. I want to thank you very much for joining us on the show and wish you best of luck with your tour.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Tune called Ojos Negros, Black Eyes, by Vicente Greco, in a performance by bandoneon player Alfredo Marcucci and ensemble Piacevole, here on Live and Local on Illinois Public Media. Stay tuned next for a conversation with Karen Kim of the Parker Quartet. They're going to be at the Krannert Center in Urbana Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. 170 million people use public media every month, and during our three-day mini drive, we hope to encourage at least 300 listeners to become supporters of WYLL, your public radio station. Beginning February 10th, you can call in a pledge of support, or you can go online now at willpledge.org. In this portion of Live and Local, my guest is Karen Kim, who is one of the violinists with the Parker Quartet, and they're going to be playing at the Krannert Center in Urbana Sunday at 3 in the afternoon, I think. Does that sound right? Just looking for
Yeah,
3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we just heard a performance of one of the pieces that's going to be on the program. In fact, it's the very first music on the program, the opening movement from Joseph Haydn's Quartet, Opus 77, number 1, nicknamed the Lobkowitz Quartet. And I'm pleased to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I guess the obvious question, I did read the answer, but it's an interesting answer, so I'll let you give it. Why the Parker Quartet? It's not the usual sort of naming for a quartet, I don't think.
Oh, yeah. Well, we actually all grew up in different parts of the country, and we met in Boston. And we named ourselves after the Omni Parker House, which is a historic landmark in Boston.
And they have some famous rolls, I guess, known as the Parker House Rolls.
Parker House Rolls, Boston Cream Pie, also originated there, as well as Boston Baked Beans.
Well, both of those are extremely important. Did you just stay there a lot, or you just went there a lot, or were just big fans?
You know, I think we just liked the connotation of the hotel, and it's, as I said, a very historic place. A lot of writers used to live there, didn't live there. A lot of writers used to meet there, so it has kind of art in its history also.
Actually, a lot of writers used to live in hotels quite often here and elsewhere. I was always amazed to read that. And, of course, it has as a Boston landmark. I guess that says something about your origins as a group and your friendship. I assume you're all close friends?
You know, as close as you can be when you see each other every day.
I remember asking some question around that issue of the Pacifica Quartet, who are here in residence at the University of Illinois. And I guess they gave some semblance of an answer that, you know, yes, obviously you have to be very close to work well together, but then there's certain things that about working together that come up, I guess. What is it like to work that closely all the time?
You know, I think a quartet dynamic is a lot like a family dynamic. You know, you have just a general understanding and acceptance and appreciation of one another. And, you know, you find yourself in situations definitely where you argue or, you know, you get frustrated, but it's, you know, it's just part of your existence together. And that being said, we all know that we respect and appreciate one another.
What drew you together in the first place? I mean, why you four and not some other combination of people?
Well, before we started playing together, we had met in various different combinations and had played a little bit together before. So we all already knew that we really liked each other's playing. We actually started playing together just for credit at school, not with the intention of being so serious, of being a long-term group. And then as we continued to play together, we realized we had something special.
So you kind of got thrown together as a class initially?
Oh, we chose each other, but it wasn't, it just wasn't knowing that we were going to stay together for so many years.
Sure. Well, I remember when I was in college, I was just thrown into, a brass quintet of some kind, and I didn't know the rest of those people, and that didn't go over so well, but that's also, I didn't keep playing. But you guys, obviously, it went quite well. And you're now doing some interesting things. In addition to touring, you have some interesting residencies. You're with the quartet in residence for the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. I didn't know they ever had such a thing. And then you have a residency with Public Radio in Minnesota.
Yeah, we had those two residencies. They're both over now, but they were really great experiences.
What did they involve?
Well, our residency with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra involved, we played in the orchestra sometimes, and they presented us as a quartet in some of their chamber music concerts. And then we also did a lot of educational work for them, going out into public schools and talking to kids about music and string instruments and stuff like that.
But you didn't play with the orchestra as individuals?
Not, you mean as like soloists?
Well, either as soloists or, you know, you played in the violin section and so on.
Yes, we did.
You did?
Yes.
Do you have a lot of orchestral experience coming in that you also do as well as the quartet work?
I would say that that's probably the most orchestral experience we've had outside of what we did in school. So it was a great opportunity.
And is that it, do you think, for orchestral work, or it depends what comes up?
Well, I think at this point in our lives, we're all very dedicated to the quartet, and the quartet is very time-consuming, so we're just focused on that right now.
And what about your work for Minnesota Public Radio and American Public Media? What was that like?
That was a lot of fun. We worked a lot with Fred Childs on Performance Today, and we went into the studio, I think it was 4 times, and just recorded a bunch of different pieces and talked about them. And then we also did a Midwest tour for them. So we went way up into northern Minnesota and Iowa and stuff like that, and just had a lot of interaction with the Midwest community through them.
Do you have other residencies currently or planned?
Nothing right now, but are definitely open to something coming up.
So you obviously enjoy involvement in educational activities.
Oh, yeah. It's such an important part of what we do.
And you do a lot of those things as you're on tour, depending upon where you are and what presenters want you to do?
Yeah, actually, we, on this tour, have been doing a lot of master classes and lecture demos.
Meaning that you will, let's say if you're in a university community, you'll work with some of the other student quartets? Or
yeah,
how does that work?
Yeah, so listening to their chamber groups and sometimes also people on their individual instruments.
You have a recording out. I think it's just the one so far, isn't it, on Naxos?
We do have that recording out, and we also have a recording of Bartok quartets out.
Ah, so your two recordings, the first is with Naxos is of Ligeti mm-hmm. quartets and then Bartok. So those are, well, the Bartoks, of course, have been around for a long time and recorded by many people, but they're still particularly challenging. The Ligeti, has anybody recorded those before you guys?
Yeah, there are recordings by a few quartets, actually. Arditi did one. I think the LaSalle Quartet recorded them. And also, I know the Hagen Quartet recorded number one. I'm not sure if they recorded number two.
And we'll be hearing the Hagen in some music of Dvorak in just a moment. But why did you choose to record those particular composers? I guess especially the Ligeti, which, you know, his music doesn't exactly show up with great regularity on quartet programs.
Yeah. Well, I think the number one thing about recording Ligeti's music was just that we really loved it. We had heard some performances of his piece, and I think they just really spoke to us.
How do audiences respond when you play them live?
You know, it's different for each of the pieces because the first and second quartets are very, very different. The first quartet, I think, is more accessible. It's very influenced by Bartok, and it's a very, very effective piece. It's just has a lot of color, and it presents a very interesting journey for the listener. The second quartet is more avant-garde, but we've had a good response to it. We usually speak before we play either of these pieces just to give people an idea of what's going to happen, and I think that's helpful.
And maybe how to listen for it.
Yeah.
Or listen to it. We don't have that recording, or I might give a little bit of a sample. You're playing on your concert in Urbana on Sunday some music by George Kurtag, who is mm-hmm. a Hungarian composer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Born 1926, which obviously means he's still around. What's his music like, and why? I guess you've chosen this for the same reason. You obviously love the music.
Yeah. Well, we love Kurtag's music and actually had the great fortune to work with him at a Carnegie Hall workshop. his 12 microludes are really amazing pieces. They're very, very short. Some of them are maybe 30 seconds long, but each of them just has a very, very strong character to it, and they're very cool pieces compositionally. They're each inspired by a different note of the chromatic scale, so mm. it's kind of interesting to hear how he approaches each of these different notes.
And it's listed here as an homage to someone named Mihai Andras. Who is that?
He's another composer.
So, and I noticed Kurtag does do homages to other folks. There's some pieces that he's done to paying tribute to Schumann, and I think there's others as well.
Yeah, he's very, very inspired and influenced by other composers, I think.
Well, we should let the audience hear some other music that you're going to be playing on your concert. We're talking with Karen Kim, who is one of the violinists with the Parker Quartet, who are going to be at the Krannert Center in Urbana Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And we play a little bit of from a Haydn quartet that you'll be doing. And then there's these wonderful pieces by Dvorak known as Cypresses. Where does that title come from?
Well, the Cypresses actually were originally songs that he wrote when he was a young man. And then later in his life, rearranged them for string quartet.
And we're going to sample one that is the ninth in the series. Out of how many total are there?
There are 12 that he arranged for quartet.
And you're doing four of them. This one is called Thou Only Dear One. So I gather that was originally the song title?
Yes, yes.
And we'll hear the Haydn Quartet here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was one of the Cypresses by Antonin Dvorak, arrangements he made for string quartet of some of his songs. This one, the song title was Thou Only Dear One. It gets the not very exciting title of Moderato in the string quartet version, and this was a performance by the Haydn Quartet. You can hear four of those Cypresses played by the Parker Quartet Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Krannert Center in Urbana. My guest on this part of Live and Local is Karen Kim, who plays violin with the quartet. And you're closing out music by Brahms. What made you pick these particular quartets of Haydn, of course, who has written many, many, and Brahms, not so many?
Well, this program, I think, is interesting because it just gives a good spectrum of music history as well as different regions of the world. So I think we just felt like it was a balanced program to present.
Have you performed a lot of Haydn's quartets, or just so far selected ones?
Well, I guess it's all relative.
I guess, yeah.
Haydn wrote so many quartets, but he is a staple of our repertoire. We love his work. Just find it really inspiring and creative, and it's almost like makes you feel healthy to work on Haydn.
What do you mean by that?
I feel like working on Haydn is something that always brings us back to the basics of what makes a really great quartet. So it's always something good to have in your repertoire, I think.
Is that sort of something where, you know, the often musicians will say that Mozart's music is so difficult to play, not necessarily because it is technically so, although it often can be, but because just to make it sound right is more challenging, maybe because it can be fairly spare compared to somebody like Brahms.
Yes, I think that's very true.
Keeping things in tune and so on. I imagine that you usually do try to do a mix of pieces. You said this is sort of a historical survey of sorts. Do you usually try to get some more contemporary music on most programs?
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes presenters don't want such contemporary pieces on their programs, but we always suggest them. It's one of our passions, and we also think it's just really important to present the music.
If you had to characterize yourselves versus some other quartets, what do you think stands out about your sound or about your approach to music making?
Oh gosh, that's a question that's really hard to answer for yourself.
I know. well, I mean, just because there are so well, partly, but also because there are so many quartets that go around the world, young ones and not so young ones, and you're among the younger. And there's a number of quartets coming through our community, so I just wondered if you had an impression, either that you hear from others or that you have in mind when you approach your work together.
Sure. Well, I think something that's definitely special to our quartet is that we really love working on contemporary music, but I think that working on contemporary music really informs the way that we play the standard repertoire also. Sometimes working on music that's very conceptual can just kind of get different ideas into your brain, and then you realize music such as Haydn, which sounds so simple, and in a way, you know, you don't have to do much to it to make it understandable. It does have all of the innovation and creativity of more modern music.
So at one level, Haydn was the Kortok of his day, maybe.
Exactly, exactly.
It's Karen Kim with us on Live and Local. She is a violinist with the Parker Quartet, who are going to be playing Haydn, Dvorak, Kurtag, and Brahms Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And why don't we go out with, I guess, the final music on the program, since we played the very first music in one of Haydn's movements, and this is the finale from the Quartet of Brahms, A Minor Quartet, his Opus 51, number 2. And Karen, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Listening to a performance by the Cleveland Quartet of the final movement from the Quartet Opus 51, number 2 of Johannes Brahms on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Here are some of the events you can go see and hear live in our listening area. Tango Buenos Aires, we've mentioned, of course, on the program. Catherine Randolph Theater is the location for the Red Mask Players performance of Laura. That's this weekend, Friday and Saturday. And I think they have a performance on, just the Friday and Saturday performances, 8 o'clock. And the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra is playing tonight at 7:30 in Urbana at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The Boneyard Jazz Quintet is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5. And Rebecca Williams plays at Indigo Artist Co-op tonight at 7 in Champaign. It's Death and the Plowman at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30. Kevin Hart's Vibe Tribe plays at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6. Jazz at the Red Herring is at the Red Herring Coffee House in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus. That's tomorrow night at 9. It's the Family Winterfest at the Center for the Community Center for the Arts at the Independent Media Center in Urbana from 2 to 5 on Saturday. David Howie is at Huber's in Champaign tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And on Sunday, it's the Parker Quartet in the afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Krannert Center. The Prairie Ensemble gives its club concert at the Canopy Club in Urbana Sunday evening at 6:30, along with the band Sandunga. A program called Music and the Wesleys at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. That's at 3 o'clock Sunday. The Parish Duo are at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana at 8:30 on Sunday. There's live Irish music with Emerald Rum at the Blind Pig Company in Champaign. That's Sunday evening at 5:30. And the George Turner Quartet plays jazz at the Iron Post in Urbana Sunday night at 7 o'clock.